Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the quarter century mark of podcast episodes for Biscuits, a hockey podcast. Episode 25. I'm Dave Lozo of many, many websites, but no longer Up Rocks. I've been laid off, so that's one less thing to squeeze into my Twitter profile, although it is sad because I will miss that place, and it was fun to do stuff there, and I might still do stuff there in the future, but for now, all that matters is hockey, and all that matters is Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Dave.
How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Are you over it yet?
I am.
Really?
Yes. I'm good. I've made a full recovery from this time last week. Where was this? Where was the Leafs series? They were up, right? Or was it? No, it had just gone 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
And there was still some hope. But then they lost two straight. But I'm good. I'm over it. I wrote a thing this week where it's like, this is the first time that the Leafs have lost a playoff series, and I'm not completely miserable about it for days and weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that's good or bad, but future looks bright, and they gave it a good run, and I think the better team won, and I can't get too worked up.
And you're rooting for the Caps, sort of, now.
Kind of, yeah. And it's weird. Like, I just kind of threw that out on Twitter, like, you know what? I kind of hope the Capitals go on and win the cup now. And there's like two very distinct schools of thought as a fan. Like, there's that team just beat me, so screw them. I want them to lose in the most miserable way possible. And you know, lots of Leaf fans seem to be kind of on that side of things. And then there's the side where it's like, in a series like this one, where like nothing really happened, there wasn't anything where you come out of that like, oh, I can't stand those guys. You might as well hope they do well, because then you can pretend
right.
that you were the second best team in the league, right? You can be like, hey, we lost to the champs. We could have been number two. Who knows? Whereas if they, like, one thing I like to do every year is when the Stanley Cup is decided, I like to go back and figure out, like, who was the team that lost to the team that lost to the team that lost to the team that won the Stanley Cup out of the 16 teams? Because that, there's one team every year, like, you are literally as far as possible from winning a championship. And it's always just nice to throw that team out there, because that fan base is always like, oh, we never even thought of that. Thanks. We had just gotten over getting eliminated 6 weeks ago, and you just made it so much worse. So hopefully that team's not the Leafs this year, because I know I'll get that thrown right back in my face.
Well, before we move on to the current events and things people care about, like teams that are still in the playoffs, I want to get your take on the Capitals fans that showed up to Maple Leaf Square to watch their team win in Maple Leaf Square. It was two girls, I think, for game six, and it was like two dudes for game four. And one of the dudes for game four wasn't even a Caps fan. He was a Flyers fan living in Toronto who was just like, I hate the Leafs. I'm going to go to the store and buy an Ovechkin shirt, go to Maple Leaf Square and root against the Leafs.
Right.
Now, as a Leafs fan, or just as a person, How do you feel about that whole thing of like another team's fans showing up at what is essentially like a party for Leafs fans and just like crashing it essentially?
See, it didn't bother me that Caps fans showed up, because that's, you know, at the end of the day, it's not that different from when Leaf fans show up at other teams' rinks, which they do all the time.
But the rink is different to me than like hanging outside and watching it on a big screen. I don't know. I don't mind it. It's weird. To me,
it's a little bit different. I just, you know, like I'm up here in Ottawa, and every time the Leafs are in Ottawa, a bunch of Leaf fans take over the whole building, and Senator fans are just giant babies about it. Like, they just, they're, oh, you, and they always, they make all this stuff. Oh, you're so rude and obnoxious, and oh, these fans are so terrible. And then you see, you know, I kind of like that you saw Capitals fans show up at a Leaf fan thing, and Leaf fans are just like, oh, hey, okay, go ahead, have a, you know, stand here, go stand in the front row, that's fine. Nobody did anything. Everybody left them alone. It was cool.
And it's the front
right
row,
up until,
too.
Right up until you find out that one of them was a Flyers fan. Because at that point, it's like, that doesn't offend me as a Leafs fan, but if I'm a Flyers fan, I'm like, you're not a Flyers fan anymore. You can't put another team's jersey on in the playoffs and just, and like, that's, like, there's this thing with Leaf fans where, and I get it, because it's, I don't know if it, maybe it's a Canada thing, because you also see it with the Canadians, and a lot of it depends on where you live and where you were raised and all that, but it's like, there are people who are, their favorite team is just whoever's playing the Leafs.
Man, really?
Or their favorite team is whoever's playing the hat. Like that, I had like my grandfather, that was his thing, ABC, anybody but the Canadians. And because he was in Montreal and he was like, I just, whoever beats these guys. But it's like, it still goes on. Like, I mean, imagine being a fan of another team, but hating a team that you don't even have a rivalry with. You just happen to live there and just being like, I'm going to go put on another team's jersey and spend 5 hours standing outside.
It's insane.
Just to troll Leaf fans. And then turns out, like, didn't even really troll them at all, because most Leaf fans are just like, eh, whatever.
Sure.
So good try, good effort, Flyers fan.
It's weird because, like, I get it from the Leaf hater standpoint of why you would go there, because you want to be an obnoxious jerk for 3 hours. Like, I totally see the rationale behind it. But, like, if you're the two girls and you're, like, huge Caps fans, like, if you go inside the building, yeah, you're going to be surrounded by Leafs fans anyway, but, like, yeah, it's different. You're inside the building. Like, if I'm, like, say, like, okay, I'm a Giants fan, and someone was like, hey, I don't know, Giants-Eagles in Philadelphia, playoff game, wild card game, you want to come? Yes, where are we sitting? Well, we're not sitting anywhere inside. We're going to watch it out in the Lincoln Financial Field parking lot on a big-screen TV surrounded by Eagles fans. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. That sounds like the worst experience ever for me, because if the Eagles win, I'm surrounded by like 200, you know, drunken idiots who are going to be in my face. And it's not about like Philly versus Toronto. It's just about the environment you want to watch the game in. I just don't know why, as a Caps fan, you would want to do that. But
yeah, I don't know. I didn't mention it to me. You know, represent your team. I didn't mind that. I hope it doesn't. I don't know. It'll be fun to see what happens if the Leafs ever play like the Habs in the playoffs, where there is a significant, I mean, those are probably the only two Washington Capitals fans in all of Toronto. You know, see what happens if suddenly like 20% of that area is all Leafs fans. That might end up being a bit of a different vibe, but
yeah. All right, that's fair. But speaking of things that could have gone horribly wrong but didn't, for Nashville anyway, the PK Subban trade. I love talking about this, because at no point, so last night in game one of all the Western series, it was really all about winning and losing the trade. It was PK Subban, 3 points, probably should have had a fourth. I still think he should have gotten a fourth on that last goal by Vern Fiddler, but whatever. And then Adam Larson scoring 2 goals, the guy who was traded for Taylor Hall. And I feel like we're at a point with PK Subban where the takes are all pretty much the same. It's Montreal's stupid, PK Subban's great, Nashville won that trade from the moment it happened until now. But there's this unbelievably weird sentiment about how the Oilers are where they are, not because of Connor McDavid, not because Cam Talbot played 73 games and was just insanely good against high-danger situations. It's Adam Larson. And then Adam Larson scoring 2 goals last night just amplified it to the point where it's unbelievable how delusional certain Edmonton people are.
Yeah. And you know, like, I get it from a fan perspective. I like,
do you though?
If
you
yeah, if you're Joe fan and your team makes a trade, and especially if your team makes a trade and then all the so-called experts are like, that's a dumb trade, I get that you're going to twist yourself into knots a little bit to try to come around on it and defend it. I get the sense that, I guess I have to give some credit to Peter Chiarelli, because I get the sense that the Oilers front office has done a very good job managing the perceptions on this trade. I feel like almost from day one, where the trade kind of happened and everybody was sort of in shock, like that can't be the whole trade. There's got to be something else coming back. That couldn't just be one for one. You know, it feels like almost immediately you sort of got the tide start to turn and, you know, but yeah, this just the fact that this trade happened and now the Oilers are good, and therefore the Oilers are good because this trade happened, is a little dicey. And I was off of it because I my prediction at the beginning of the year was that Connor McDavid was going to be healthy. He was going to have an Art Ross season. The Oilers would probably get back to the playoffs, and everybody would give all the credit to Milan Lucic for teaching them how to win and just
protecting McDavid.
Yeah, his sheer presence in the dressing room of playing the game the right way would rub off. And it's like everything that I predicted kind of happened, except you don't actually really hear about Lucic all that much. It's all Adam Larsson. And yeah, I guess apparently scoring two goals for the first time in his life, more or less, one of which he just threw towards the net and the Ducks kicked into their own net. So
Taylor Hall wouldn't have done.
No. Taylor Hall would not have done that. And like I said at the time, like when that crazy day happened, my take on the two trades that I think has actually held up kind of well was that I felt like the Canadians made a bad trade that they didn't have to make, while the Oilers made a very bad trade that I could kind of understand why they made.
Yeah.
Like the to me, the metaphor is like if the brakes on your car aren't working and you take it around to like every mechanic in town and all of them are charging outrageous prices and you're like, I'm not doing it. I'm not paying that price. Eventually, after your car's hit a tree for the third or fourth time, you just got to go and pay to get your brakes fixed, whatever it costs, whether you get ripped off or not. And it was kind of like the Oilers blue line was sort of like that, those failing brakes where like, how many years are we going to throw away before we just go and pay an outrageous price to make the blue line better? So I get why they made the trade. But this idea now that, you know, like somehow subtracting Taylor Hall was the magic key to...
Oh, locker room cancer, Sean. That's all I've heard on Twitter.
Apparently.
Just apparently the worst locker room presence since the mumps is what the people are saying about Taylor Hall, even though I've never heard that once here in New Jersey. So I don't know. I'm the other thing, too, I find with the Edmonton media is... They and you're right. The thing about Chiarelli, I think, is absolutely right. Is the Edmonton media takes all of its cues from management. Like, there's really not a ton of like critical self thought that comes out of them. Like, let's say if the Oilers were to have crapped their pants this year, let's say they would have finished with 82 points, missed the playoffs. I still think the Edmonton media would have been like, well, imagine if it was Taylor Hall, they would have had 73 points. This is still an there still would have been that sentiment because. They continuously go like all those years the Oilers were bad. I think there's something with Kevin Lowe. If Kevin Lowe tells you something, like the media there is just like, yeah, he's right. It's Kevin Lowe.
Well, the other thing with the Ottawa media and part of the fan base, you got to remember like there's a couple of weird factors at play here. One is that the team was bad for 10 straight years, and having been in Ottawa, like when a team is that bad for that long, it messes with everybody. Like there was a time, like the Senators at one point were considered the worst franchise in all of sports, not just the NHL, like their first 5 years of existence. And that messes with you. Like it got to the point where the local media here, you know, like if the Senators could just cleared the zone properly, they would get like a whole column, like, congratulations, they're really turning a corner here. Because at some point, it just gets mean to keep dumping on them and criticizing, like it's overkill.
Yeah.
So I think that might be part of it. But I think also another factor is you got to remember, a huge chunk of the analytics movement rose up in Edmonton. Like it came from bloggers and fans in Edmonton, not just there, but that was kind of one of the main ground zeros for that whole thing. And it was happening at a time where if you were writing online, you were a blogger, you were therefore on one side and the media was on the other side. And so, you know, I wonder if that's part of it. Like the Edmonton media strikes me as still very old school, like very, like
yes,
it's grit and courage and heart and shot blocking and, you know, Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier walking by the Islanders dressing room and realizing how many bruises it took to win a Stanley Cup. And like that, I wonder if part of that is because for this time you had at that point was just this niche, very loud, very opinionated, very kind of in your face opponents who kept throwing stuff at them from an analytics side. And it just sort of entrenched them even more to the point where even today where that you know, that stuff that was happening less than 10 years ago feels like it's from another era. Like, everybody looks at this stuff, everybody gets along, it's mostly fine. And I wonder if, like, that's still the one city where there's still some bad blood there and some, you know, to the point where when the analytics guys all go, oh my God, this is a terrible trade, there's just almost this knee-jerk feeling of, okay, now I got to go and dig out the other side and figure out why these guys might be wrong.
It's just weird to me that, like, you can't see two things. Like, yes, the others got better. Yeah, the trade helps the blue line, but at the end of the day, like, okay, I'm looking at the roster from this year. Who would you say Adam Larson is more important than here? Connor McDavid? No. Leon Draisaitl? No. Jordan Eberle? No. Cam Talbot? No. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? No. Andre, however he's pronouncing his name these days, Sekera. I'm pretty sure that Brian Burke, who's calling the games on NBCSN, has dropped the second E from Sekera. I have no idea how to pronounce that guy's name anymore. Klefbom, Patrick Maroon. He's probably the ninth or tenth most important guy in the team, and that's with the top three guys, McDavid, Draisaitl, and Talbot, all being heavily, heavily way more valuable than, like, the fourth most important guy on the team.
Yeah.
So I just don't know how you can't just say, yeah, sure, Larson helped fortify the blue line. Sure, it was great. But it's not like the defense played great in front of Cam Talbot. Like, Cam Talbot is probably the second biggest reason behind McDavid, then Draisaitl. And then after that, it's just like a bunch of guys having good seasons. And yeah, Larson's one of them. But even in the first round, I mean, Zach Kassian was more important than Adam Larson. It's just insane. It's like, it's almost like they were waiting around for that one great Adam Larson game in the playoffs. Like, the one goal was enough to do it. They were like, all right, this is great, we got it. And then he scored a second one, and it was just like people orgasmed inside the press box at the Honda Center and could not wait to get their Adam Larson takeout. And now here we are taking on the takes. So it's the content cycle.
You know what I can't wait for? I can't wait until the NHL Awards, when the voting comes out, and we find that there's one fifth-place vote for Adam Larson for the Norris Trophy.
Fifth. There's going to be like a top. I bet
and
you.
And we all got to sit around and go, I wonder where that came from.
Top three.
Gosh,
he will get a top. He will get a top three vote from somebody in Edmonton. I don't know if I'd bet on that. If you give me odds, I'll bet on it. If you give me 10-1,
yeah,
I would bet you $5. 5-1. 5-1 odds on $5 that he's a top three vote getter on someone's ballot.
Yeah, I'm going to say top five Norris. Long shot, if somebody was really feeling particularly feisty.
No.
Fifth place Hart Trophy.
Oh, God. Usually I don't look forward to the awards outside of, like, tweeting jokes during it. Now I really want to see the ballots for Adam Larson.
Oh, those are the weird votes that just get snuck in there, are the best. Like, some of the old ones are great too. Like, in the 80s and 90s, where nobody even really saw the lists, and then they, like, websites started compiling them, and you go back and you're like, what? Who did that guy get? How'd that guy get a vote? But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that. And then, you know, needless to say, Peter Chiarelli's going to get a ton of GM of the Year votes too, because he did the two things that you need to do to get votes for that, which is, number one, improved his team, and number two, took a bunch of crap for it.
Like, yep.
That's the two things that they're looking for there. I mean, these guys, GM of the Year, like, they will vote for people who get fired in the middle of the season. So they will definitely vote for a team that is in the second round. I mean, what are your thoughts on this series and the Oilers? Like, they can win this series, right?
Oh, sure. I picked Ducks in seven. I said it from the beginning that pretty much anyone in the West could come out of the West this year. And I think I might have excluded St. Louis from that. So, of course, they beat Minnesota, who I picked to come out of the West. So, at this point, yeah, 100%. I think at this point, the Predators just have, you know, they have that that rocket up their ass that's just going to propel them to the Stanley Cup final at this point. Once they swept Chicago, it kind of feels like a foregone conclusion. But for sure, Edmonton can beat Anaheim. But I just thought Anaheim would be a little bit deeper, a little bit better. But I didn't expect John Gibson to take a bigger dump than Cam Talbot did in game one. That was a pretty exceptional third period of goaltending on Wednesday night.
Speaking of Wednesday night, the other game, the Nashville game, it was pretty much the same game.
Like, yeah, right.
3-1 lead for the road team. Home team comes back. Road team scores the late goal, takes the lead. And we get, in a sense, we get kind of even the same storyline coming out of it, where you've got the other big trade that happened on the same day as the Hall Larson trade, which is obviously PK Subban for Shea Weber. And just like in that other trade, one guy is sitting at home and one guy is lighting it up in game one. And I mean, this was what, with apologies to Adam Larson, who played well and had a little bit of luck on one of those goals. Like, PK Subban was just all over the place. Like, that was a PK Subban game. And, you know, again, same thing where a lot of people look at that and go, okay, we can declare the debate over. And I'll disagree with you a little bit. I don't feel like we've found the consensus on Weber for Subban. I still feel like there's a chunk of Montreal fans plus kind of old school fans who still really like the Shea Weber side of that. But like, if you're a Montreal fan, you're kind of on the fence and still feeling okay about it. That game Wednesday night was the last thing you wanted to see, especially after your team just lost a series where they could have won, but they couldn't create that. Like, they didn't have that one game-changing guy who could take over on offense. Even Shea Weber's a great offensive defenseman, but he himself is a great offensive defenseman. He's not one of these guys who just makes all four guys on the ice with him more dangerous,
right?
Like Subban can be. And this was like, you're sitting there as a Montreal fan going, gosh, what were we missing? What was the one thing that could have maybe tilted that series by giving us an extra goal or two? And then you sit down and watch this game and there's...
You're like,
your old pal.
Right.
Just tearing up the ice. Just the best player on the ice, head and shoulders.
So the way I felt about the two trades that day last year was the Larson for Hall trade could work out to be better than we think at the time. I still don't think it really did work out. I think it's like Taylor Hall is still really good. The Devils are just an absolutely putrid team. But with Weber, Subban, I really thought this was going to be the year where it was the absolute best it was ever going to get for Montreal, because as the years go on, you know, PK's 27, Shea Weber's going to be 32 next season when that season starts. This was going to be as good as it gets. And it's not so much the trade is bad, but it's the philosophy that Marc Bergevin instilled based on that trade. You know, he gets Shea Weber, he gets Andrew Shaw, he goes gets Dwight King, he gets Steve Ott. He just gets the toughest toughs to ever tough, and they lose essentially by one goal in a six-game series where Carey Price was phenomenal. He basically let up one bad goal the whole series, and it wasn't even really bad. It was that Zuccarello power play goal in game six, which was... It was not good, but it wasn't bad. They lost because they couldn't score goals. So you're like, all right, six-game series. Henrik Lundqvist stole it from us. I mean, yeah, Weber, Subban, whatever. And then, yeah, PK Subban goes out and he gets a goal and two assists. Basically sets up the winner for Vern Fiddler with the pass into the zone, but the Jay Bouwmeester touched it, so I guess it's not an assist. But you can't – I just don't know how at this point you can ever – think that it's ever going to get better for the Canadians, because like Nashville is probably going to go to the conference finals at the very least. PK Subban's going to play for a Stanley Cup, very likely. Is he going to have a good enough team to beat Pittsburgh or Washington? I don't know, but I just think like PK Subban winning a Stanley Cup this year would be the funniest possible thing that can happen, and I picked the Caps to win the Cup. I would laugh my balls off if PK Subban wins the Stanley Cup his first year in Nashville. That's all I want. That's all I want, Sean.
PK Subban versus Alexander Ovechkin in the Stanley Cup would just be so confusing and upsetting for so many people out there.
It's like Thornton and Kessel last year, like where it's like these two losers that can't win, and now this year it's going to be the two selfish guys who can't possibly be team players, and oh, hey, well, one of them's going to get a Stanley Cup, so enjoy.
I think you're bang on the trade in the sense that it was always a trade that you looked at and you went, okay, if this is going to work out well for Montreal, it's going to be a case where they're going to have the edge early. And then, you know, as the Weber contract goes bad and as, you know, given the aging curves and where these guys are in their career, probably years 4 or 5 plus maybe favor Nashville. But for now, Montreal's got the window. They got Carey Price in his prime. If this trade makes them better, even for a couple of years, then go ahead and do it, and maybe it's worth it. And you're sitting there at the end of year one, and you're sitting at home, and PK Subban is you know, again, not just happens to be on a team that's doing well, but is having games where he just kind of single-handedly grabs his team and says, you know, we're winning this game. The thing with Subban is that I will never understand. Like, we're not in the locker rooms. We're not behind the scenes. We don't know what conversations happen. We don't know. I'm sure every team has got stories we have not heard about and never will hear about. unless it's Boston, in which case we'll hear about all of them the day that the guy gets traded. But
the second the guy leaves.
But everywhere else, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say PK Subban's a, you know, great guy in the dressing room or whatever. I have no way of knowing. But, like, I think back to that. You remember that 2014 series against the Bruins? Where it went seven, and it was game seven was in Boston, and after Montreal won game six, PK Subban had a quote. I don't have it in front of me, but I'll paraphrase it. I think pretty closely. Like, he basically said, "I can't wait to go into Boston and feel all the energy and all the noise and everything that's coming from their fans and their building, and I can't wait to take it all away from them." And then Montreal won game seven. And at the time, everyone was just like, okay. And then 2 years later, everyone's like, you know, you just can't win with PK Subban. This guy's just not. And I'm sitting there going, like, can you imagine if Jonathan Toews had ever said that before a game seven road game and Chicago had won? Like, you would be leaving. They would build a statue of Jonathan Toews outside the other team's building. Like, you would be leaving and the statue would already be there. Like, if Mark Messier had ever said that, we would never hear the end of it.
He did say that.
Well, he did. He didn't even go that far, right? He just said, "Yeah, we're gonna win.
We're gonna win tonight."
But like, PK Subban was like, "I want to go in my biggest rival's building, and I want them to get as loud as possible so that I can shut them all up." And 2 years later, people are like, "I don't know if he's got the right attitude for how to win."
Jonathan Toews would have never said that because he's a very good Canadian boy who would never dare disrespect the team. He just respects everyone so much. That was a series where PK got the breakaway because, like, Dougie Hamilton ventured off to, like, the middle of nowhere to hit a guy, and then somehow PK Subban got a breakaway, I think,
series. Yeah. And then, I can't remember if it was... Is that the one where he had the overtime goal and he's, like, waving the crest of the jersey at them? Mm-hmm. Like, if other guys did that in this league, we would all just gush over how wonderful and inspiring they are, and yet, you know, he does it, and apparently, I don't know, apparently they lost a game in February one day, and he smiled a little bit too much on the way back to the bus, and that was it.
No, there was the one game where he did that during the regular season, and I think, like James Van Riemsdyk did, like, a revenge game-winning goal celebration where he did the same thing, because God forbid anyone ever have any fun in this stupid sport that nobody
Shut
watches,
that
apparently. The other thing, too, with the Subban trade, which I hadn't even considered at the time, was, like, now Carey Price is a year from being a free agent. So imagine you're Carey Price this year, watching your dumbass team not score any goals for you. You have one of the better first rounds a guy can have as a goalie, and you lose in six games. And now you get to that post-game, the postseason post-mortem press conference, and Mark Bergevin's like, we don't need a number one center. I think we're going to be fine. And you're Carey Price, and you're like, you want me to sign an extension July 1st based on this? Like, what if you lose Carey Price because you traded PK Subban? Like, what's the opposite of GM of the year? Is it BM of the year? Like, you just take a dump on your once great team because you wanted to get tough?
That should be a new award.
Sponsored by Metamucil?
Yeah.
Come on.
I enjoyed that, like, Montreal post-series, like, the locker clean-out. I like the fact that, like, Bergevin was asked, would you consider trading Carey Price? And he was like, no. Hard no, absolutely not. And immediately everyone's, like, pulling up the quotes where he said the exact same thing about Subban last year. And
Short phone call.
I still, you know, I will believe that when the first NHL star leaves his team as a free agent anywhere near his prime, like, when that happens one time, I'll start believing that it can happen. But until then, I mean, Price is going to, but he's going to sign some huge monster extension, and it'll again be the sort of contract where it'll be 8 years, and you'll be like, oh, years 6, 7, and 8 are going to be pretty ugly. But, you know, I feel like we talk maybe too much about windows opening and closing, but Montreal, you're kind of looking at them going, like, you guys are going to be in tough shape in a few years, cap-wise. They got, like, Pacioretty, too, is on that ridiculously good contract. But he's only got, I think he needs an extension next summer. So, yeah, it's, like, time to go out and do something, you would think. But they tried last year, and look how that worked out.
Yeah, it's, I think the last guy to do it was Zach Parise in 2012 because like he wanted out of Jersey. So he kept, he went to like arbitration his last year and just took like a 1 year, whatever it was, $6 million deal. And then he bailed for Minnesota. Yeah,
even he wasn't, I don't know, like he, I don't think he'd even had ever had a 70 point season or one. Suter maybe. Maybe Suter would be more the guy. But yeah, I mean, like we, I mean, Stamkos got to the free, got to free agency, but I guess that was as close as it's come. And, but yeah, he made his choice and that worked out great. Good job.
Yeah. Speaking of Stamkos, by the way, I every time I think I can't possibly love Nikita Kucherov more than I do, and this happens every offseason, a guy from Russia, Finland, Sweden, wherever, goes back home, some local media guy's like, Nikita, what's going on, buddy? How is the season? And then like the guy just vaporizes his team for 20 minutes in an interview in his native language, and then like a week later we find out, oh, it was just misinterpreted, that's not what I said. I 100% believe Nikita Kucherov is super pissed because this guy was held hostage by Steve Yzerman all offseason. Nobody came to give him a new contract. He signed a deal for less money than he was worth. And then he watched his team absolutely, absolutely, in his mind anyway, dog it all season until the very end until it was too late. I am so on team Nikita Kucherov here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you. And yeah, I was – the fun thing about – like you're right. This happens every year and it's like –
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's like they should, if you have European players on your team, it's, I feel like in the exit interviews, you should like hand them a little card that says, remember, we have the internet now. Things you say in your local paper might make it back to us. Cause yeah. And the other weird thing about the Kucherov situation is like, nobody can figure out who he was talking about. Cause he's like, you know, I had to play with some guys and you know, I didn't have chemistry and people are looking at like who he played with and they're, they can't really figure out who it is that he was talking about, but
it was Kalorn though, wasn't it? Like he was talking about a guy that got a big contract and then started dogging it. And like,
that could be it.
I don't know.
I was disappointed. He didn't like, as I was reading it, I'm like, okay, and get to the trade deadline, get to the part where you trade away a bunch of guys, miss the playoffs by 1 point. And everybody says your GM did a great job. Like, come on, like I'm alone on this bandwagon. I'm completely alone on the Steve Yzerman had a bad trade deadline bandwagon, and I thought Nikita Kucherov was going to jump on next to me, but he never did.
He's going to be like, I was watching that Washington-Toronto series, and Brian Boyle made the greatest pass in the history of hockey to set up a game-winning goal in overtime. Maybe we could have used that goal in regulation this year. I don't know.
Could have.
We could have used that. Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time getting a read on Tampa because I always feel like they're – maybe before this year anyway, that they're set up, they're going to be great for a long time, all this sort of stuff. And I don't know, there's always like rumblings that like Stamkos and John Cooper don't get along, and now, you know, they screw Kucherov last summer and he comes out and has like a 40 goal unbelievable great season and it's still not good enough. Part of that's because Stamkos wasn't there, I understand that, but I don't know, there's weird tension all the time, it seems like, coming out of Tampa. And it's weird for an organization that seems to be so set up and has been so good.
Yeah. Well, and Kucherov too, like, I mean, he didn't mention Cooper, but, you know, he's talking about, well, I was playing with this guy and it was going well, and then I didn't understand why we got broken up. And I mean, the other thing that's interesting is, like, they've got these guys who need new contracts now, and you're assuming that Yzerman's just going to come in and do the same Jedi mind trick. But when you've just seen one of your teammates go and sort of say, hey, I took less money and then this is where it got me, you wonder if, I don't know, it might be, maybe it's fraying at the edges a bit more than we think.
I think if you take a contract where you're getting paid like $2 million less per year, you produce like you've never produced before and you feel like your team's dogging it. Like, this is the perfect response. He also had a thing too about where I think he said like Stamkos going out messed things up because Nemestikov was so good with him, and then that set off like a chain reaction. Like, I feel like his analysis of the situation is pretty good. I think he was talking about how great he was with Drouin, and if you look at his wowies with Drouin, like they were at like 60% like Fenwick wise and Well, what are you going to do? I hate the fact that we're going to come in here and do this next week or in 2 weeks, and it's going to be like, well, Nikita Kucherov, you know, he said it was taken out of context, and he loves Steve Yzerman, and he loves his teammates, and he didn't think anybody was dogging it, and we're going to have to just, you know, kill Kucherov at that point for lying. Makes me sad.
Yep.
Well, what else do you want to talk about? We got like 20 minutes left here. We got so much. I was talking to Tim before we started. I'm like, I feel like during the regular season, we're like talking before the weekend. It's like, I don't know. Should we talk about the Panthers again? There's like nothing going on. Now we're down to eight teams, and it's like there's 43 things to talk about.
There's all these things to talk about, and there's also something big that's happening Saturday, although it's not as big this year, but the draft lottery.
Yeah, nobody cares, right?
Nobody seems to care, yeah, because there's not those good players, and nobody obviously tanked the whole season to try to get the pick, which is always like, that's what makes it fun, right? When you see some team up there,
right,
and there's an 80% chance that they're just going to get it. But man, I have already started feeling bad for the Colorado Avalanche, because they just had one of quite possibly the worst season in the salary cap era.
Easily. I think it's
and they were trying. Like, they weren't, this isn't the 2015 Sabres who are like just blatantly tanking for that draft pick. This is, they're trying.
Oh, by the way, have you seen the Colorado Avalanche Twitter account like the last couple of weeks where they just tweet out like, Carl Soderberg scored 12 goals in 80 games this year?
I've got a mention of that in the grab bag this week, because I'm concerned. Like, it feels like this is a cry for help, where they're like, after we picked him up on waivers, he played 17 games and got 3 points. And you're like, do you need a hug, Avalanche Twitter account? It's very sad. But I mean, what would be more 2016-17 Colorado Avalanche than to go through that season and then lose the draft lottery three times and end up picking fourth? Like, it's bad enough that they had this terrible year in the one time out of the last few seasons where there's really not that much at the top of the draft to get excited about, but there's definitely not all that much in the number four spot. And there's a 50-50 chance that the last place team will drop all the way down to fourth.
That would be so bad.
You know what the absolute worst case scenario is for the Avalanche?
Joe Sakic doesn't get fired.
It's that. Yeah. it's all of that. Joe Sakic signs an extension. And then one of the teams that passes him, like the team that jumps up for number one, is Detroit.
Oh.
The old rival that hasn't missed the playoffs. It just waltzes right up. Oh, yeah, we'll take the number one pick. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I feel like this is the kind of year where they already have a bunch of those, the same guys that are peak second line centers. But yeah, I love the idea of, like, I understand they've changed the draft lottery now, where like it used to be where like the Devils, quote, won the draft lottery that one year. They got Adam Larson, but they picked third because of how the structure was. Like, is there any other sport where like a team has gone from like 12th in the draft lottery to first? Like, I don't know if I can remember anything. Like, I remember the Spurs one year and basketball were bad.
Like, but I feel like basketball works that way too. Like, doesn't basketball kind of do all the picks?
I think, yeah.
That way?
What you mean like where anybody can pick first?
Yeah,
I think so, but I don't know. I'm not super well versed.
It's still weighted, but yeah, like you're right. Yeah, I think the Spurs, and I think there have been teams that have definitely, you know, jumped up higher than the bottom couple. And
I think the Spurs had one, they were super awesome, then they had like one bad year where David Robinson was hurt, and then they got Tim Duncan, and then they were super awesome forever because of that. But like, I don't know if I can think of a time when a team was like ninth, had the ninth best odds, and suddenly like imagine the Kings get the pick first this year. Like, I want
it
that. I want anarchy. I want some sort of crazy weird
like,
thing.
It's going to happen if we keep this system in place. Like, it's going to eventually, we're eventually going to get that situation where some team jumps up from like 10th or 12th or 14th. And I was like, there was a part of me that was hoping something like that would happen in like the McDavid year, have the team that fit, like the 14th team, jump up and get that pick. Because then imagine being the team that like made the playoffs the final weekend of the season, and you're all excited about it, and then you get swept in the first round. You're like, wait a second, that cost us Connor McDavid because we could have finished. Like, that's my favorite thing to do at the end of the year after the lottery is done, is to look at like who won the lottery and then what spot did they finish and what team nearly finished there. Because there's so many, you look back in history, there's like so many seasons where like Like the Oilers, the Patrick Kane year, the Oilers, I think, were like 1 point away, and they were holding down that spot that ended up winning the Patrick Kane lottery up until like the final weekend. And there's been a bunch of ones like that. Like the Blue Jackets were like 1 point away from having Alexander Ovechkin, but they won a game in the last weekend. And, you know, it's just like, it's a fun way to torture.
I was just gonna say this totally reminds me of the night the Leafs lost, and you were like, I'm pulling for the Caps, and 45 minutes later you concocted the meanest possible second round schedule full of jokes at the Capitals' expense, and now you're talking about how much fun it is to go back and look at which teams could have gotten Connor McDavid.
It's great. Like I think it was do you remember the infamous Patrick Stefan open net miss?
Oh, sure.
Against the Oilers, right? So he's playing with Dallas. It's the last second. He goes down. He fans on the open net. Edmonton comes back and scores to tie the game. They go into overtime. Dallas ends up winning anyway, so it didn't really matter. But like that extra point, you take that point away from the Edmonton Oilers and keep everything else the same. They finish in the Chicago Blackhawks spot, and they end up winning the lottery, and Patrick Kane is an Edmonton Oiler.
Well, you also have to consider the fact that the NHL rigs the lotteries, right? I mean, we all know that. We all know that there's like some sort of like they never do the like I understand like it's not ping pong balls, but they have like a weird computer program that spits out numbers. Like why don't they ever do that live? I feel like that should be done.
You know what they should do? It's because the way they do it, they have this incredibly weird system, and then they do the ping pong balls. But it's like, you're right. Like every team has 14 number combinations, and but what they do is, so they have to draw four ping pong balls, and they just draw them like they put the video of the lottery up online, and it's just like the balls just come out like bang 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 bang. They read the number, and then everybody has to check down their list. Like it's not like they draw the final ball and the Leafs are like, hey, we got Austin Matthews. Like then they go down this list, and somebody comes up to Gary Bettman and is like, okay, the Leafs won the lottery. And what they should do, like how much fun would it be, especially back in like with Connor McDavid draft when they were only doing one drawing, how much fun would it be to draw one ball at a time? That was my idea for that year. Do it like they do it the Saturday night during the playoffs. You draw one ball before the game, one ball at the first intermission, one ball second intermission, and then the last ball at the end of the game. And you update the odds like as you go. You're like, oh, okay, now that we're down to three, now, because like the Maple Leafs had the best shot at Connor McDavid after three balls, we later found out. Last year, the Oilers had the best shot at Austin Matthews. If you did it that way, like imagine, like that'd be, you wouldn't be able to tear yourself away from the TV. You'd be flipping out all night. But instead, they just do this like 7 second drawing and then look up a spreadsheet. And then they keep all those guys locked in a room and don't let them outside to tell anyone.
They hit them with trank darts that knocked them out for 3.5 hours while Bill Daly's out there like stacking up cards inside envelopes with logos on them. That's just, the NHL is just not good at anything, so that's never going to happen.
By the way, just because I googled it as we were talking, the NBA, it looks to me like the team with the lowest odds that's won the lottery, ninth worst team.
Oh yeah, what year was that?
The Cavs in 2014, which was the Andrew Wiggins year.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
As well as the Bulls in the Derrick Rose year, and I think that's it. Yeah, the Spurs were third worst, the Tim Duncan year.
Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, they were actually bad that year.
There's another. There's an eighth. There's a seventh. Oh, 11th. Oh, yeah, that's right. The Magic. Remember the Magic when they got Shaq, and then they won it again the next year, even though they were pretty good.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
That was back in like the early 90s, and they took Chris Webber, and that was they had the 11th worst record.
Wow,
they were 41-41, which in the 500 in league, where 500 actually has some integrity and means something.
Did they trade Chris Webber? I don't remember Chris Webber ever being on the Magic. I thought he was a King his whole career mostly, no?
I don't know.
I feel like they
may have had him for a while. I feel like that was right around when like the NBA Jam years, which is probably the only time that I knew who was on an NBA roster.
He's heating up. Boy, this is now a basketball podcast, so we can stay in here for 20 more minutes, I guess. We don't have to be out of the room on time.
We can kick anyone out of the room we want because we're talking about basketball.
Just kidding. Yeah, they're never going to listen to this anyway, so they're never going to find out about it.
That's true.
You want to do some mailbag questions?
We got as well, yeah.
I feel like a lot of the questions you already covered. Some people want to know about the Mark Bergevin, what the hell he's doing, the funniest team to win the draft lottery, Ovi versus PK in the cup final. People are like basically like dictating our content without us even really knowing it.
You know, it just on the subject of the funniest team to win the lottery, because I do an annual power rankings, and that's one of my categories, and we kind of touched on it already, and I feel bad for even mentioning it. But I do think the funniest result would be for the New Jersey Devils to win, so that we can all start calling Taylor Hall Mr. Lottery. Like, he becomes the good luck, the only man to have won a draft lottery four times, and just, like, they should make him be the representative.
I was just going to say, yeah, send him there.
How cruel would that be?
It's like, we have Vinny Viola from the Florida Panthers, and he's like, oh, Vinny Viola. And then it's like, from the New Jersey Devils, Taylor Hall, he's just fucking miserable. He's just sitting there like, ugh.
So, because, I mean, that'll be on Saturday. So Adam Larson will have scored his hat trick, including the overtime winner in game two. And he'll just be just
stewing. And when the Devils win the lottery, he has to do the interview with, like, Catherine Tappan. He's going to have to be the guy. So, Taylor, what's it like to win another lottery?
Yeah.
Don't talk
familiar
to me,
ground Tappan. For you, Taylor, right? You've done this before.
All right. Ice Crew Official wants to know, what are the best and worst brands of frozen pizza?
Wow.
I like DiGiorno. The worst is obviously Elio's. Elio's is just, yeah. I don't even know what that is. That's not
See,
even
I feel
brand.
Like we have different brands probably up here in Canada. To me, I'm grocery shopping for a family. The best is whatever's on sale this week, and the worst is whatever is not. So I'm not paying $7 to feed my entire family. You crooks.
You ungrateful freeloaders.
Yeah.
God, your kids are old enough to have jobs at this point, right? They're like 14 and 22, aren't they?
They are getting there. Yeah.
Yeah, close enough. This is actually a good question from Scott Aisky. Probably spelling his, or pronouncing his name wrong, but it's about that tweet from NBC Sports this morning. He says, I can't watch hockey anymore after the NBCSN Pens Caps tweet. What should I watch instead? For those that don't know, the Pens and the NBCSN tweeted a thing out tonight because the Caps and Pens are playing tonight, and it was a picture of two Pens and a picture of two Caps to Pens. So Pens Caps, and now everyone's been ruined by that tweet.
Like, I feel like I've been watching Pens and Caps playoff series for 25 years. And I don't know if I should be proud or disappointed that never occurred to me, but it's like now I was so excited for this series too. I thought this was going to be, I wrote a thing this week. Like, this might be the best second round series of all time. And now I'm just like, and it got even worse because somebody tweeted at me. They're like, oh, that really gives us something to chew on. You go straight to hell.
And Cam Cole tweeted, Bick, cause it's the cup. Get it. Oh. Get it.
Cam.
There's times on Twitter where I'll see someone tweet a joke and I'm like, oh, I could have thought of that. And there's times on Twitter where I see a joke and I'm like mad because I know I never would have thought of that. That's the Pens Caps tweet. Like, I never ever, that never ever would have occurred to me. Stupid NBCSN with their puns and cleverness. Victor Danyama. Oh, Dan Straight Edge. He's a guy who changes his Twitter name all the time. Wait, hold on. Victor, this probably means something. Victor Danyama, I don't know. He wants to know, what is the best vegetable?
You know, Dan, you don't have to send a question every week.
I'm going to say
green. If it's not there, it's just not there. Are you really? It's okay.
I'm going to say green peppers. I like green peppers. All right.
Sure.
Christian, this person's got a bunch of X's in their name. I don't know what the heck this is. His Twitter handle is Christian H, numeral 8 SU. So Christian Hates You wants to know, if Kovalchuk returns to the Devils and you are Ray Shero, what's your first move? What do you
do? Yes, sir. It's the annual Kovalchuk is coming back from the KHL rumor. My understanding is if he wants to come back, it has to be with the Devils, and then the Devils could trade him. Like, he can't, he doesn't come back as a free agent. So, I mean, if I'm Ray Shero, I don't want him now, like with where my team's at now. That's a situation where you want to trade him, like a sign and trade type deal. So what I do is, I probably go to him and say, go talk to as many teams as you want. You have my permission to negotiate. Come back to me with a list of at least three teams. Not one team. If you give me one team, I'm not trading you. Give me three teams so that I can get some real bidding going and some real and get the best possible and go from there and hope I can get picks, prospects, guys who can help me finally get Taylor Hall to the playoffs, something like that.
That is the correct answer. Like after Alex Radulov came back, now people will be like, oh, let's get the new Radulov and Kovalchuk. You can probably get some stuff for him. Slaw, who goes by Heslaw Tony on Twitter, wants to know if the Fiala play last night bothered you.
Well,
the hit into the board. Like, I guess, like, I guess, not like in terms of like the actual violence. Like, yeah, that was bad.
The fact that, yeah, I mean, that, like, the hit at the time I was watching, I'm like, oh, that didn't look good. And then you watch the replays, and
yeah,
like, I'm not, I don't want to make light of it, but I mean, it looked like one of those old Super Dave stunts where, like, the budget for, like, the body double was like $8, so they just filled a jumpsuit with
his legs went ways that I've never seen legs go.
It was like that one leg was just not that. That was like the sort of thing like you'd see that in a video game, and be like, oh, I think I broke the physics engine on this because this isn't work. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like the puck is gone, and he gives him kind of the extra shove. So I don't like those plays in general.
No, he still had the puck, didn't he?
The puck was gone, but it wasn't a late hit. Yeah. It was well within what's okay in the NHL. But the puck was gone, and he gave him the shove. And it's like I mean I wouldn't mind if the NHL just said we're gonna try to move away from that, and if the puck's gone, it's gone. But that's a play that happens a dozen times in every game, and it just. This one happened to be at the exact right place and angle and everything that it resulted in a really ugly injury. So I didn't like in general, I don't love those hits, but I can't single that one out and say, oh, that should be a suspension or whatever. Cause that play happens all the time.
Hold on. I'm watching the play again. I thought he was just trying to carry the puck behind the net and Bortuzzo was just cutting him off. And then it just went bad. But let me see. Let's see this replay here as volume trickles into the podcast. Well, oh, yeah. Oh, he was 100% still carrying the puck. Yeah.
He
still had it. It was just a bad, unfortunate, like, there shouldn't be a suspension or anything.
We just got the first time that our podcast was stopped for a replay review.
Actually, he was offside, so it should.
He's going to come upon further review.
Like, I thought honestly, like, that the report was going to be, like, he tore his groin entirely. Like, I thought, like, it was just his legs went in so awkwardly that, yeah. Like, his body, I didn't think his femur absorbed.
What was the report?
Oh, his broken femur. He's out for the season.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's not.
You know, it's bad when they actually tell you what the injury is.
Or if you're a Carlson and you're just bored and you just don't want to answer the question anymore. You're just like, yeah, broken foot, leave me alone.
I had a broken foot yesterday, but my foot's not going to be broken tomorrow, so I can tell you about it. Like, I don't think that's how injuries work, Eric, but all right.
Yeah, when tonight when Mark Stahl is constantly kicking him in the foot in the corner when they're battling on the wall or something like that. Yeah, we'll see how that works out for Eric Carlson.
Careful there, Rangers. There's forensic experts up here in Ottawa who will analyze any Eric Carlson injuries.
Oh, by the way, my apologies for talking you out of the Rangers. That's on me. I shouldn't have done that to you.
I didn't change it on the post, and I'm leaving it there, and I'm claiming I got 5 out of 8 correct.
That's fair.
I'm gonna hope there's not a lot of crossover between the podcast and the previous.
And I guess we'll do one more. Graves, WB Gravy. What is the most overrated fast food chain? Everyone knows for me, it's In-N-Out. In-N-Out's very, very, very overrated. Tim agrees. Yeah, he's from California. He knows. It's fine. It's a fine, fine place. It's just not this thing where you need to Instagram your goddamn friggin' In-N-Out every time you go there. So that's my
answer. I mean, I went. We don't have them in Canada, I don't think. We don't have them in Ottawa, at least. And I went, and when I was down there, and it was fine. The fries aren't good, though. I'm sorry. I know.
Right. They're not.
I know, like, you put. I know I have to say a code word for them to put, like, sauce on them, but I need to have a code word that they make real French fries and not just those, like, skinny little things. Burgers were okay, but yeah, you're right. Like, it had been hyped so much.
Yeah, it's fine. It's perfectly okay. It's just Jesus. Every time like someone's in California, like they take a selfie while they're sipping their In-N-Out. Like, just yeah, this is the 90th time you've posted this. Like, I don't post something every time I go to Taco Bell. Maybe I do. Taco Bell's really good though. Before we wrap it up, you want to do some predictions real quick? Because even though the series are going to be all one game old by the time you hear this, we're honest people. Would you? What do you got in the West?
My picks. I had the Predators. I want to say the Predators in 6, Oilers in 6, and I had the Capitals in 7, coming back from a 3-1 series deficit.
Wow. I like it.
And I took the Senators in 7. I just feel like anytime everybody seems to agree on something.
You're bailing on the Rangers. You're bailing on the Rangers now?
Yeah,
again?
I am.
This
I'm bailing on the Rangers. Are you trying to talk me out of that, Dave?
I'm gonna say Rangers in six. I think they're okay. I'm going Preds in five, Ducks in seven, Rangers in six, and Caps in five. If the Rangers are good enough to beat Montreal, they're good enough to beat Ottawa.
I think they should be, but just, you know, Ottawa is starting to feel to me like that one weird team where things don't really make sense. And Tyler Dell had a good thing where he, like, the one of the big problems of the Senators all year was they had a terrible fourth line that was just getting caved in every shift, and they don't use them anymore in the playoffs. They're actually using good players now. So they're maybe better than the numbers would lead you to believe. I'm part of me is kind of dreading it being up here in Ottawa, but I could see them pulling off the home ice upset.
I'm anti two things. I'm anti a conference final that's Ottawa, Washington, or Ottawa, Pittsburgh. I don't want to see that. I don't know. The Rangers versus one of those two teams would be way more fun. And two, I'm tired of this guy in Ottawa whose name is Borowicki, who does not pronounce his name like anything like it's spelled. It's absurd. Yes. I don't understand how they I'm anti. I also don't want Guy Boucher to win. I like Guy Boucher. I just don't want to watch like a Caps. Like if the Caps are going to play someone in the conference finals or the Penguins are going to play someone in the conference finals, it can't be a team like Ottawa that's going to strangle the life out of the series. I want to enjoy the conference finals. So for that standpoint,
Rangers. Every time, every series, there's always like some controversial call and some fan base always acts like the NHL is rigging it. Like I had Bruins fans who were like, obviously the NHL put their call. And I'm like, you know how the NHL always rigs things in favor of the small market Canadian team that has zero fans outside of the local border. But if anything happens, like if they were ever going to do it, the idea that you're going to have Ovechkin or Crosby in the conference final, either against New York or against Ottawa. Yeah. I don't know. Don't take it. Don't take any borderline calls out there, Senators. You may want to play this one safe.
I want to see the NBC SN tweet for that one. You know, Ovechkin, yeah. Hoffman, Stone, Backstrom. I'm leaving out Carlson for comedic effect, but that's just not going to be.
It's just going to be Carlson over and over again.
Yeah,
Ovechkin, Carlson, Backstrom. Still Carlson.
Carlson's good enough, I think, to get Ottawa a game or two against the Rangers, but I just don't know how the rest is going to... But I don't know. The Rangers' defense still sucks. If Lundqvist... Like I said this on the other podcast, like Lundqvist was like 946 for six games. So like let's say he comes down to like 930, 935 through two rounds. Like that means he's going to be at like 915-ish probably for the second. That might be enough for Ottawa to do it, but I don't know. I just think if they're good enough to beat Montreal in six, they can beat Ottawa in six. But... Who knows? I went 4-4 in the first round, so what the hell do I know? All right. I think that's it for us, right? We're exhausted. We've worked for like 55 minutes, right?
We've done 55, of which like only 15 was NBA related, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to come back next week.
Do you have any hot NFL draft takes?
As a Giants fan, it's weird. They picked 23rd, and every mock draft, I've seen them taking a quarterback, a running back, an offensive tackle, a linebacker. So I just want the Giants. Essentially, the only thing I want for the Giants is if Deshaun Watson is there. I love Eli. Love me some Eli. But if somehow Deshaun Watson falls to 23, I would like to see them take Deshaun Watson. But I don't know.
Beautiful.
That's my take.
There it is.
How about you? How about the Edmonton Eskimos? You got any feelings about what they're going to do this year?
The CFL draft, where the teams just, there's like four Canadian offensive linemen who just go top four, and then that's it. The draft is over.
Who's that Canadian coach again? Mark Trestman? Is he back in Canada? Is he doing his thing?
Yeah,
in the
CFL? I don't know where he is. I feel like he's still bouncing around the NFL somewhere, but did he? Yeah.
I don't know. I lost track of him. He was a Bears coach, and then I think he got fired.
Let's cut the nonsense and let's get Johnny Football and Tim Tebow up here and let's make some CFL magic.
All right. What do you want to sell? You got anything you want to sell? We have a book. We never talk about it on this podcast. It's the 100 something or other players to do a thing. And by the way, the three players, the Blackhawks, are all out in the first round, and Erik Karlsson, who is on our list, not on the NHL's list, second round. Evgeny Malkin, same thing, second round. Henrik Lundqvist, same thing, second round. So it's a much more accurate book, I believe, that you can get on Amazon.
It is. I don't know if you saw it. Somebody did like an analytics approach to the top 100, and they basically came away. I'll summarize They basically decided that our list was better than the NHL's list.
I didn't see that. Oh, I thought they were doing like an analytics list of their own guys, where it's like Alex Semin is number 32 or something.
Well, it was more like here's the guys who shouldn't be on the list, and here's the guys who should be there instead. And I think ours was closer to their ideal.
We're the best. All right. Well, that was episode 25. We're going to be back next week at an earlier day. I think Tuesday is when we're going to drop next week, because I'm going to Seattle to do drugs and eat grasshoppers at the Seattle Mariners game. And I'm doing that on Thursday. So that's the day we record. So look for us earlier next week. And that's it. I guess send us home, Sean.
That's it. Everybody, have a great weekend, and enjoy watching NHL playoff games that will cause you to completely revise your position on trades that happened a year ago. And then go on Twitter and yell at people about it.
Yeah, especially us. We love that.
It's awesome.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.